This episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 650. Today we hear from Ian, who asks,
I haven't ever done it myself, but some stories use taste as characterization, such as the fuddy-duddy furniture in Clint Eastwood's living room in The Line of Fire, or in various books of George Pelicano's, where the choice of driving music of his characters really brings them alive, although other times it falls flat for me. Maybe it's a cultural thing, and that might be the weakness of this as a technique. It may not travel internationally. However, it's a technique I don't recall noticing much. Is it something you have used?
Oh yeah, we use it all the time. It's a fairly ubiquitous technique, though some writers really draw attention to it. Ian Fleming was the pioneer. His books are entirely taste. The plot is completely incidental to the endless descriptions of hotel rooms and cars and scrambled eggs and different brands of cigarettes and different brands of booze. The James Bond books, particularly, I mean, he only wrote two other books besides the James Bond books, which were The Diamond Smugglers and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. But the James Bond books, they basically read like a Playboy lifestyle section, except they're completely riveting and really, really tense. And I reread him every once in a while to just try to understand more about how he did that, because basically it's lifestyle porn with a thin veneer of plot and action. I don't know how he did it, but it's amazing. And yeah, it's very, very effective. And though it is somewhat culturally limited, you can make it so that it carries over across cultures by the way that you employ it. For example, the descriptions of Bilbo's tastes in The Hobbit. There's a lot of taste-based characterization in Tolkien's work, especially of the Hobbits. And the descriptions of Bilbo's tastes in The Hobbit, I mean, it's a fantasy world that's kind of based on an idealized pastoral version of English country life. But they carry over really well. They carried to Japan, they carry to everywhere. Part of it, of course, is that almost everywhere that Tolkien has been published is a place that had a recent pastoral history. But part of it is just that there's certain things that are human universals, so you don't have to know that Grzinski is a composer of very beautiful Baroque lullabies and you can hear them in your head. If you describe someone as relaxing into the music of Grzinski and being carried off on the flute line across an imaginary pond at dusk. Grzinski, by the way, is not a real composer. I just made that up. And I did that to make the point. You can employ taste in ways that are not culturally bound, but appear to be culturally bound, which is also part of your world building. And you do that by using the human universals attached to it, by using concrete tastes and touches. So you don't just say, he opened a bottle of Macallan 12. You say, the rich sherry oak flavor of Macallan 12 exploded on his tongue into a vapor of honey and turpentine. So you don't even have to know what the Macallan 12 is. You don't even have to know that it's a scotch or a whiskey. All you have to know is that it's a drink and it has this aesthetic effect. Now, if you're just characterizing like by a camera sweep across the room, like in The Line of Fire, is that opening sequence of, it's not the opening sequence of the film, but the parts where we're introducing Clint Eastwood's character by looking at his things, which comes quite a ways after the opening sequence of the film, which has Clint Eastwood's character in action. In situations like that where you're doing that characterization via sweep, what you want to do is use the specifics that anchor it to the culture, but also use the human universals, but they won't be the literal taste or the ongoing experience, but they will be the initial perceptual experience. You don't have to be a member of a culture to appreciate what someone's taste says about them at first glance. You may miss a lot of the subtlety, but you'll get it right off. You can tell looking at someone regardless of their variety of dress, whether they are a fastidious dresser or a sloppy one. You can tell immediately by listening to someone hum a tune whether they love music or hate it, and whether they are musically inclined or not, and the two don't go together. I know people who couldn't carry a tune if you put it in a sack and strapped it to their wrist, but they are so enthusiastic about music that they will make your ears bleed. And I know people who have perfect pitch who couldn't be less interested. You can tell a lot about a person at a distance. It's not always accurate, and appearances do fool you, and people do use appearance to fool on purpose. But humans are heuristic machines. We form rules of thumb that we use to quickly judge and categorize phenomena, including people. This is how racism and prejudice actually come to exist. They're heuristics gone wild. So we use this mental shorthand for everything because as we move through the world, there's far too much for us to be attendant to every detail. So what we do is we categorize things according to our existing expectations, and then if something about that thing doesn't fit, that pops it back up for analysis. That puts it to the front of the brain. It forces us to deal with that thing as an individualized phenomenon as opposed to an epitome of a previously understood phenomenon. So you can use that quality of human nature in your taste-based characterizations simply by figuring out what details to focus on. And your actual focus does not have to be the apparent focus in the text. Look at James Bond. A lot of the brands of stuff that jam-pack the pages of Casino Royale and Thunderball and You Only Live Twice, and You Only Live Twice is a great one because it's set in Japan. And it's far better than the movie. A lot of the things that jam-pack the pages of these books don't exist anymore. In fact, a lot of readers who are younger than me won't even recognize them. Won't even recognize them from movies. And yet, you can take a naive reader from another country who's not familiar with any of the stuff at all that made up the late Imperial British era, and put them in front of James Bond, in front of the books, I mean, and they'll be absolutely caught. And they will understand exactly who Bond is by the fourth page of Casino Royale, if not by the end of the first paragraph. Which I believe the first line is, James Bond lit his 40th cigarette of the day. That's the introduction for the character. Tells you a lot. And tells you a lot even discounting the cultural baggage we have now that we know how carcinogenic smoking is and it's become a detestable habit instead of a habit of refined gentlemen. Because the rest of the scene makes it clear, because he's at a baccarat table, because he's engaged in other obviously expensive and refined activities, including having an ongoing running tally of his winnings, the context makes it clear what the taste-based characterization is, and the taste-based characterization gives you a real visceral flavor for everything about this guy. And you can supply both context and taste in the same package. Takes a little bit of work, but it's totally doable, and it is a very effective technique, and it is so frequently done that you don't notice it. Some of the best techniques are so frequently done that you don't notice it unless the writer makes an issue out of it. And the way to learn how to do those is to study the writers who make an issue out of it and do it really well. So, I know this episode has basically been a long, rambling advertisement for Ian Fleming. Sorry about that. But he is the best out there for this. However, I'll give you two others, kind of from the same era. Raymond Chandler does this really, really well. Not quite as well as Fleming does, but he was also earlier. But he does this really, really well. And Dorothy Sayers does this extraordinarily well. So, check out Ian Fleming, Raymond Chandler, Dorothy Sayers. All from the mystery and thriller genre, not coincidentally, because that genre was the first genre really to master this. However, for honorable mentions, check out The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. Early non-thriller use of this technique. And of course, if you are into Victorian-era literature, it's probably worth checking out Jane Austen, who doesn't do this quite as prominently as you might expect, but actually, because Comedy of Manners is so focused on taste and whatnot, it sort of happens incidentally, and does with some of Oscar Wilde's books as well. So those would also be good authors to check out for this. And of course, if we're going to do that, I can't not give a shout-out to my friend Gail Carriger, who has a lot of fun with this technique. And she's much more contemporary and writing about cultures both in her main universe and in San Andreas Shifters and in Crudrat that she doesn't actually inhabit.
Oh, wait.
So,
we were asked specifically if this was a technique that you have used, and it is one that you use quite a bit, in particular with your main character from the Clark Lantham novels and also from your epic science fiction series.
Which isn't out yet, but yeah, that's true. And the first chapter of Down from 10 is almost entirely this kind of characterization.
Oh, yes. I've been aching to reread that because I've been stuck in a giant snowbank.
Okay, so for my stuff, Down from 10, the Clark Lantham mysteries, and anything else that's actually on the market right now that would be good to look at? I do it rather extensively in Suave Rob 3. Suave Rob's Amazing Ass Saving Association. The characterization of Empress Edith is almost all taste-based.
Oh, yes.
And also...
Man in the Rain.
Yes. The Man in the Rain. Short story
in the Predestination Cobra Khan universe.
The Man in the Rain. So check out The Man in the Rain as well. And those would be good examples for my stuff where I use this technique. Thank you very much for the question and for the interruption.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.